We just saw a significant court action in our case defending the U.S. Navy SEALs. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live. You know, a lot of people follow us on YouTube by subscribing to our YouTube channel. So for those of you that do that, we wanted to point something out, and that is we've just launched recently a First Liberty Live channel on YouTube. It's a place where you can follow these conversations. We'll still keep the First Liberty Institute YouTube channel with all the other video projects that we do. But if you want to follow First Liberty Live, just go to YouTube, search for First Liberty Live, and then subscribe to us there, and it will let you send you notifications whenever something new is coming out. Thanks for doing that. You know, Mike Berry holds several titles here at First Liberty Institute, but the one that matters the most today is Director of Military Affairs, because of what we're talking about. He's also a Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Stuart.
I want to talk about what happened in court just this week, but before we get to that first, if you would just summarize for us what this case is about. What's at the heart of it?
Well, let's start with this, right? We went from 2 weeks to flatten the curve to 2 years to flatten the Constitution.
Yeah.
That's how I kind of summarize the case. It starts in August of 2021 when the President and the Secretary of Defense issued what's now become known as the military vaccine mandate. Right? This is an order telling everybody in the military, including the reserve, you must get the vaccine or else, right? You get the vax or you get the axe. As how we describe it in the military.
Yeah.
But there are a number of people in the military, thousands, who have sincere religious objections to the vaccine. And among those thousands are First Liberty Institute's clients, 35 Navy SEALs. Right? Yes, those Navy SEALs, the ones that they make movies about, they've written books about, TV series, and so on and so forth. And these 35 SEALs said, well, we are all individually people of faith, and we individually have religious objections to this vaccine. We would like to know what our options are. Well, guess what? Enshrined in federal law and enshrined in Department of Defense regulations and policy is the ability to ask for a religious accommodation, right? To be accommodated from an otherwise applicable policy or regulation.
And that's not a new thing.
No, that's been around for years. Years and years and years. As long as the military has been issuing orders, they've allowed people to be accommodated from those orders. And so our 35 client Navy SEALs, they requested a religious accommodation just as the law allows them to do, but every single one of them was denied. And then we noticed something interesting at First Liberty. We started noticing that it wasn't just our 35 SEALs who were denied. Everybody was being denied. Not just in the Navy, but across the entire Department of Defense. Denial after denial. And it's not just a river in Egypt. And not only were they being denied, but then we noticed that, wait a minute, the military is actually approving medical exemptions and administrative exemptions. And in the law, if you're a lawyer and you know that, well, wait a minute, if you're treating medical exemptions and administrative exemptions one way, favorably, but you're treating religious accommodations or religious exemptions unfavorably, and in a blanket across the board way, that's pretty much a textbook case for religious discrimination. So that was the lawsuit we brought. So to clarify for a lot of people, did we challenge the vaccine mandate itself? No. What we did was we challenged the way that the Navy was enforcing it in a discriminatory and unconstitutional way. So that's what the lawsuit's really about.
And it's always important for us to point out, we're not taking a position on whether anyone should or should not get the vaccine. That's an individual decision. Where we enter this is what the law says concerning a religious accommodation for those who have an objection to it. And whether we personally have an objection or not doesn't matter. It's to protect the rights of that other person, because when we do, it protects the rights of everybody.
That's right. You said you used the magic word, Stuart. It's an individual decision, or at least it should be.
Yeah.
And that's what the law recognizes and protects. But the military doesn't see it that way. They see it as you get it or else. And then when somebody objects and says, well, wait a minute, I have a sincere religious objection to this, right? Making me do this is going to violate my deepest held convictions and beliefs, my religious convictions.
Yeah.
And the Navy and the Department of Defense has said, too bad, right? You get it or else. Now, we've had a lot of people reach out to us, veterans, who said, when I served, you were required to get all the mandatory vaccinations. You had to get those.
I've heard that same comment through our social media and elsewhere.
Right. And so people have questioned, why are you defending these guys? All right. They're not following the orders and directives that they've been given.
Yeah.
And that's where that the other point that I made a few minutes ago becomes so important. It's when we point out to them, well, wait a minute. Did you know that the military is saying, if you have a medical reason why you don't want to get the vaccine, you're fine. You don't have to get the vaccine. You can continue to serve. You can continue to get all the pay and benefits, right? If you have a medical, or if you get an administrative exemption, you can continue to serve. You get all your pay and benefits, right? The only reason the military is saying no is to somebody who says, I have a religious objection. And that's when people kind of stop and scratch their head and say, well, that doesn't sound right.
It's not fair. It's not constitutional, which we're going to unpack here in
Absolutely.
A bit. It is no small thing to sue the federal government. And it's no small thing to actually have favorable outcomes in the process of suing the federal government. But that's exactly what happened on our side this week in federal court. Unpack for us what happened and what that point in the process in this case means.
Well, to get us to this point, you know, I mentioned that we sued the Navy and the Department of Defense. So we filed the lawsuit in November of 2021.
Yeah.
And we've been fighting every step of the way. Any of our veterans in the audience will understand the analogy of, you know, sort of fighting inch by inch, foot by foot, right? To just take as much ground as you can. And that's what we've been doing. We won a huge important preliminary injunction in this case back in January of 2022.
Which basically means?
It was the first win in the nation.
Yeah.
And what happened was we asked the court, an injunction is when you ask the court to order the other side to do something or stop doing something, right? Enjoin them is the legal term we use.
Yeah.
And what we were asking is for the court, the federal judge, to tell the Navy, number one, you cannot kick these people out because of their religious beliefs and their religious objections to the vaccine. And number two, court, please tell the Navy to stop punishing them, because the Navy was doing a number of punitive things and taking adverse actions against our clients.
And that's while the case is being heard
right.
in court. It's not a decision, but it's to stop it while the case is being
that's
heard.
That's why it's called a preliminary injunction, right?
Yeah.
It's preliminary in nature. It's sort of It's temporary. It's not permanent, right?
Yeah.
There is there's such thing as a permanent injunction, but a preliminary injunction is just sort of a stopgap and saying the court basically says freeze,
hold on,
right? Freeze,
yeah.
Stop doing whatever it is you're doing until we figure this out, and that's what the court did to the Navy and said stop punishing them, and no, you cannot kick them out while this until we essentially have a final ruling in this case.
So that was a big deal. It was the first in the nation.
It
but
paved
then
the way.
The government attorney showed up and said, we're going to appeal that injunction. We're going to ask the court to take another look at it. Where did it go then?
Well, here, I got to set this up too, Stuart. So,
yeah.
Again, it's First Liberty, right? We like to think of ourselves as big shots, but we're really quite small, relatively speaking.
Well,
right?
Compared to the federal government, yeah.
So the Department of Justice is, people may not realize this, the Department of Justice is who defends the DOD, the Pentagon. Because the Department of Justice, that's their job, right, is to defend the federal government.
Yeah.
They have, no pun intended, an army of lawyers,
yeah.
right? They have an army of lawyers that they can just wheel in. They show up from an airplane from who knows where, right? And they go to court, and they continue to pound you and pound you and pound you, throwing up every conceivable procedural obstacle you can imagine in court, right? And we've had to fight that. Again, like I said, we're taking every inch of ground that we possibly can. And when we won that preliminary injunction, that when the court says freeze, don't do anything, right? Immediately, the Department of Justice says, well, we're going to appeal that. And that appeal goes from the Federal District Court in the Northern District of Texas
yeah.
to the Fifth Circuit, right? The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And they did that. And they, what they filed in the Fifth Circuit, this is important for people to understand, is an emergency stay. That's the technical term. So what that is when that's when the losing party, in this case the DOJ, says to the court, hey, we lost the preliminary injunction. We don't like that. We don't like losing. We're not used to losing. And so now we're asking the Court of Appeals, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, this is an emergency. This is really, really important to us. Please reverse what the district court judge did.
Which, so we're so used to hearing that language now from the federal government. Everything's an emergency, so they can push it through in a hurry. And that's how they took it to the Court of Appeals. They said, it's an emergency. We've got to have a solution. But then, what did the Fifth Circuit do?
So, hot off the press, the Fifth Circuit just issued a ruling upholding the district court's ruling, right? That's really the simplest way to say it. The Fifth Circuit looked at everything that the DOJ submitted and said, yeah, we hear you. We know you think it's an emergency. We know you think it's really important. We know you think that you have a really strong case. And I'm obviously editorializing here. But
yeah.
But the Fifth Circuit said, not so fast. You really don't have that strong of a case. In fact, these Navy SEALs, they have a strong case. They have a really strong case. And the law is on their side, not your side. The facts are on their side, not on your side, Department of Justice and Pentagon. And so the Fifth Circuit effectively told the Department of Justice, you lose again, right? You know, it's not a final ruling because it's on an emergency stay.
And, and that's important to make clear,
right,
is this is not a decision. It's not an opinion like we usually think of a ruling. It's just a stop along the way. But that doesn't lessen how important it is that both the district court and now a three-judge panel at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals have both said, we think the Navy SEALs are going to win this. We think there's a likelihood that they would win.
It sends a very powerful message. And maybe a good analogy to use for our viewers is, if you've ever played sports or you're a sports fan and you've watched the World Series or the NBA Championship, you know they play a best of seven series, right? Mm-hmm. Well, those first two games, I promise you, every team wants to win the first two games in a best of seven.
Absolutely.
Does it mean they've won the series? No, right? You don't win the World Series at best of seven just by winning the first two games. But boy, it sure gives you a pretty strong, you know, lead, right? And most people, when they're watching a best of seven series and the team comes out and wins the first two games, what do they say? Oh, it's not over yet,
but
man, it's sure looking like the team that's got a 2-0 lead, they're probably going to win.
And
they may not win, they may not sweep, right? But
it's looking good.
They only have to win two more, you know what I mean? So it's that sort of analogy.
It also shakes up the opposition. I'm sure they're having some serious conversations at the federal government level, at the Department of Justice, about what just happened and how did that happen. How did this little nonprofit down in Texas
they're probably asking themselves, how did we lose? We're the Department of Justice. You know, we're the United States of America, you know, and so on. And my response is, you lost because you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong, and the court recognized it.
And the law is not on their side. It's actually on the side of the Navy SEALs.
So that's right.
Here's what we can't emphasize enough. In spite of what's been happening in the courts, and in spite of the courts saying, stop it, hold place, freeze, don't punish them, don't fire them, the Navy SEALs, some of them are still being treated really badly.
Yeah, and we finally just now started to put a stop to that. You know, initially, the Navy, I think, just as I've said all along now, they really do believe they're above the law. I mean, I think they believe that they are a law unto themselves. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit, but there's a real danger to that. If you're a free country and you live in a democracy, right, and you have the government start to believe that it's above the law, that is dangerous. Because when a government believes it's above the law, then it believes that it can pretty much get away with anything.
Yeah.
And we started to see that a little bit with the Navy. Of the judge issued this injunction, as I mentioned earlier, saying to the Navy, stop punishing them. And the Navy, I mean, again, I'm not there in their offices. I don't know what discussions they had, but for whatever reason, they didn't stop punishing them. I mean, everything just continued, and our clients told us, I thought we won. It's like, we did win, right? Well, why are they still doing this to me? And we're like, wait, what are you talking about? You know, and so we had them provide us all the evidence of the things that the Navy had continued to do as if that preliminary injunction had never happened.
Which is generally called flouting the law. I mean, they're just ignoring the courts, ignoring the law.
It actually got so bad, Stuart, we had to file a motion with the court asking the court to hold the Navy in contempt for violating the court's order. And it wasn't until we filed that motion that that's when we finally started to, I mean, again, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth on the other side, but
yeah.
in my mind, I sort of envisioned somebody saying, oh, these guys are really serious. They mean business. And so, like, you know, you said, you mentioned this punchy little, you know, nonprofit from Texas. They probably thought, who are these guys? Well, you know, they've never tussled with First Liberty Institute before.
And they're going to remember
now.
They know. For sure. The impact of this goes far beyond the SEALs that we're representing. It raises a constitutional issue, and you've alluded to that several times already. Explain to us, unpack for us what that constitutional is that this raises a problem with.
Well, as I said just a few minutes ago, right, when you have a government entity, whether it's the White House, the Department of Justice, the Pentagon, and they believe that they're above the law, right, that does violence to the Constitution. If you are a constitutional republic like the United States is, and you believe in the rule of law like we do in this country, and you have a government entity who says, that doesn't really apply to us. We're the government. You do it because we said so. Right? That there is a harm to the Constitution and to the rule of law. And unless somebody steps up and says, no, not on our watch, right? We the people. Just read the Declaration of Independence. That's essentially what it says, is that we are declaring to Great Britain and King George, you are not above the law, right? No person is a law unto themselves, and we are declaring our independence from you as a result of that. That was what happened back, you know, in the 18th century. Obviously, we're a far cry from that here, but I think the spirit of it is still is the same, which is it took First Liberty Institute and 35 brave patriots to step up and say, what you are doing to us and to our other our fellow service members is wrong. And we're willing to stake our careers on telling you that you cannot do this. The law and the Constitution don't allow you to do this to us. And guess what? We got now two federal courts to say, you know what? They're right.
What's the impact on the American people at large? I mean, this seems like it would go far beyond just the 35 that are affected directly here, but this is going to have an impact on all of us somehow.
Well, I think millions of people have been watching very closely what's happening in this case, especially, as I said earlier, when we had the first big win in the nation, right? Think about it. Go back just 3-4 months, and it looked like dark days ahead. Right, when it comes to the Constitution, when it comes to people with religious beliefs and religious accommodations from these vaccine mandates, and people thought, there's no way these Navy SEALs are going to these SEALs are going to get crushed, right? And when we won, it sent a massive shockwave throughout the nation. Right? I mean, look, we got invited on major national, you know, TV networks and shows to talk about it because it was that big of a news deal. And it sent the message that if you stand up for what is right and you do it the right way and you hire somebody like First Liberty to help you, free of charge, I might add, you can win, right? There is a way to win. So that's sort of one of the ripple effects that this had. But the other one is, I think it also highlighted the danger to not just to our Constitution and our rule of law, but really to the military. Because when you serve in the military, it requires a high degree of trust between the people serving and those serving over them, you know, the superiors and the subordinates. And when a superior officer, whether it's the president, secretary of defense, commanding officer, when they tell you, you will do this or else, and whatever it is that they're telling you to do violates your religious beliefs, your deepest held convictions, and they basically tell you, I don't care that it violates your religious beliefs, you're going to do it anyway, right? And if you don't, I'm going to kick you out. That trust that's necessary for a military unit to function effectively, it's shattered. And honestly, I don't know if there's any way of getting, you can't take super glue and fix it, right?
Right.
It's shattered. And that results in a hollowing out of the military, because now I've seen people conduct straw polls and say, how many people in this audience, with an audience of hundreds, possibly thousands, and saying, how many of you are willing to let your son or your daughter join the military right now? There's barely any hands that go up. And they say, why is that? And people say, I don't trust that the military is going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So How can you possibly have a constitutional republic if you don't believe that the people who are entrusted to defend that constitutional republic are going to do the right thing, or at least the people who are in charge of that military? So that's really the other big implication here, is that we're not just trying to win for these 35 SEALs. I feel like we're trying to save the military from itself, from heading down this path of destruction.
Yeah. There is also a financial impact to this, because it's not a cheap thing. It's not an inexpensive thing to train a Navy SEAL, to find someone who can do that, to recruit them, and then to train them up. That has to have a price tag on it.
Yeah, you know, something that really bothered me was I started to see comments from Pentagon officials saying, well, we can absorb these losses. We can kick these guys out. We'll just replace them. And I thought, can you? You know, I did some research, yeah. Stuart, and I did some math, and I learned that, according to the DoD itself, it costs approximately $15,000 just to recruit one person to join the military.
Wow.
$15,000 is what it costs to successfully recruit one person to sign the piece of paper saying, I'll join the military.
Had no idea.
It then costs, right? So that's just the person saying, I want to join.
Yeah.
To get them through boot camp, basic training, recruit training, whatever you want to call it, it costs about another $50,000 to $75,000 to get them through their basic training, and then to provide them with the necessary skills and equipment and training to be able to just do their job at a very basic level, right? So essentially, to get them through school, yeah, to become, you know, teach them how to march, how to salute, you know, that how to put on their uniform, how to shine their boot. We don't shine boots anymore, but
yeah,
you get the idea.
Yeah.
That's about $50,000 to $75,000 per service member. Now, you talk about Navy SEALs, that number skyrockets to six figures, possibly seven figures. Because why? They got to go through BUDS. They got to go through dive school, jump school, all the other top secret schools that our special forces guys go through, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, let's just look at the Navy alone.
I'm just thinking, just the equipment costs alone to do the training would be enormous.
We have a picture right here, right?
Yeah.
This is a, you know, small watercraft, right? These are special warfare combatant crafts.
Okay.
Okay. This is the equipment, and the personnel that are on that piece of equipment. In this picture represents tens of millions of dollars not to mention the human cost, the personnel, the man hours, et cetera, but just tens of millions of dollars just in equipment alone.
And that's not to diminish the individual value of each human being.
Right.
We're just saying that's what it costs to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in the Navy, since we have a picture of a naval vessel, mm-hmm, all right, and a small craft, there are over 8,000 people in the Navy currently who are unvaccinated. And I'm guessing, it's not broken down this in this detail, but I'm guessing that those 8,000 are probably, you know, asking for an exemption, probably a religious exemption, right? And so of those if all 8,000 are kicked out, because that's what the Navy said they're going to do, they're going to kick out anybody who doesn't get this vaccine,
yeah,
and they're not approving any religious accommodations, 8,000 people, $15,000 to recruit them, $50,000 to $75,000 to train them. Okay, now think about this. You have to multiply that number by two. Why? Because you have to replace them.
Yeah.
It's not. You can't just kick them out. Yeah. I got to find another one.
Yeah.
So it's another $15,000 plus another $50,000 to $75,000. That number, you then apply that across the entire Department of Defense. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Right, that's going to be just thrown out the door. Why? All in the name of doing something that violates people's religious beliefs. They're kicking people out unnecessarily. And so I don't want to belabor the point anymore, but look, we're talking at a time when there are things happening around the globe where the United States military is on high alert, right? Because we know that there are very, very real threats to American interests, not just here domestically, but abroad, in various places in Eastern Europe, in Southeast Asia. And you would think that our Pentagon would be saying, whoa, 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 we need as many able, capable people who are highly trained to be able to defend us and our interests. We need to retain as many as we can. But instead, we're kicking them out because of their religious beliefs. And you've got Pentagon officials saying, we'll be fine. We don't need them.
It's hard to believe. Before I let you go, what happens next? What's the next step in this?
Well, the ball is in the Department of Justice's court, right? Because we just won at the Fifth Circuit. And, you know, I've been talking to our legal team here and asking, what do you think is going to happen next? And it's pretty interesting. There are some who think that the Department of Justice very well could try to take this case to the Supreme Court. So hold your breath here. This will be the third Supreme Court case at First Liberty in the same year, right? Which is...
If that should happen.
If that happens, right? Yeah. So that's a possibility. The Department of Justice could ask the Supreme Court to hear this case. So that should tell people the implications of how important this case is, not just for 35 Navy SEALs, but across the nation. And look, if the Department of Justice decides, you know what, we're going to cut our losses, lick our wounds, and go home, maybe they don't. In that case, then the decision of the Fifth Circuit stands. And as we've talked about throughout this episode, it's not a permanent decision. It's not a final ruling. So we're going to have to keep fighting.
Yeah.
We have to continue to fight and slog it out. And what we say on the merits, right? That's the legal term for basically, we're going to have to continue to see this through. And I'm fond of quoting famous people. So I'm going to quote Margaret Thatcher, former Prime Minister of Great Britain,
yep.
When she famously said, "Sometimes you have to fight a battle more than once to win it." And I suspect that we may be in that situation here.
Yeah. And to be clear, and you mentioned this earlier, the SEALs that we represent will never get a bill from us. That's what we do. That's the work that we're in, is defending the religious freedom for all Americans. I mean, we can't obviously represent all 300 plus million Americans that there
are.
We'd love to, but we choose the cases that we think will have the best impact. And this one certainly will have a huge impact, both on the military, the Constitution, and the American people. So, Mike, thank you. I know you've been putting a lot of hours in on this. I know you've had a busy day today. I appreciate your making time to talk with us today. We're proud of you. Thank you for the work that you do.
I'm proud to be here. I couldn't imagine working alongside a better team. You know, you talk about the Navy SEALs, they work as teams, right? They actually, you know, we've heard SEAL Team 6,
yeah.
Right? Things like that. First Liberty is also a team. And we have a saying around here, one team, one fight. We're all in this together. So it really is an honor and a privilege to serve alongside my fellow First Liberty warriors as we defend our Navy SEAL warriors.
All right. Mike, thanks again. Hey, if you want to keep up with what's happening with this case, best place to go is firstliberty.org, firstliberty.org. There's a big banner at the top of the page that will direct you to our special section dealing with this issue. We'll keep that updated as this progresses so that you can keep up to date with what's happening. I also want to mention next week we're going to be on the road again to Nashville, Tennessee for the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We'll set our cameras up in the exhibit hall and we'll be talking to some fascinating people, including former Ambassador Sam Brownback. He was the ambassador at large for international religious freedom during the Trump administration. We've got Charlie Kirk lined up from Turning Point USA. We'll talk to Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council, even Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis, the guy with the big ark in Kentucky, which I've been to. It's impressive. It's awesome. Hey, we will be sharing those interviews and more from NRB next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Just check it out on firstlibertylive.com.